Welcome to the Senate Education Committee. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. The order that will proceed today will be House Bill 3359, House Bill 2299, House Bill 2750, House Bill 3042, in order like it is on the agenda. Maybe the first time that's ever happened. So let me start with a public hearing on House Bill 3359. Linda.
Certainly. In summary, House Bill 3359 removes the sunset on allowance of foreign exchange students to be considered residents of the school district. There is an amendment that has been drafted, and that is a dash 3 amendment that inserts new language specific to foreign exchange students in dormitories to become operative 2013. It basically is a 2-year extension to the current practice, and it requires the school district, the resident school district of certain foreign exchange students, to submit a report to the Interim Legislative Committee on Education no later than October 1st, 2012. And the report shall include recommendations for funding options in lieu of considering the student's residence.
And the dash threes?
Yes, they are here.
Do what?
Oh, that is what the dash three does.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
The 2-year extension.
Exactly. And the report.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. John Huffman, State Representative for District 59 out of the Dalles. Two of the school districts covered in 3359 are in my district, Spray and Mitchell. But we do have kids here this afternoon from Burnt River that would like to testify. Three of them will, and we're not going to take a lot of time. And I would be more than happy to come back up and answer questions, but I want to thank the committee for hearing 3359 and for the dash 3 amendments. And I think it'll give us the breathing space that we need to put the work group to work and come up with a permanent solution on funding for these five small schools that have boarding capacity for foreign exchange students and 46 students total in that program, but appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, well, we have a team here from Burnt River, and I don't know who wants to.
From Mitchell.
I'm sorry. I get all those big cosmopolitans mixed up. So I have Joris, Jenna, Karina, Lori. Come on up.
Okay, thank you. Senator Haas and members of the committee. Hi, my name is Corinna Breutigam, and I'm from Germany. I live in the Mitchell dorm, and I'm a junior at the high school. I'm here to testify in favor of foreign exchange students continuing to live in dormitories in Oregon. The first time I heard about the dorm was during a preparation seminar in Germany from a former exchange student from Mitchell, and he talked about his experience in Mitchell and how he got to know the American lifestyle as well as many different cultures because of living together with American students and students from all over the world. But to be honest, even though he sounded very positive, I really didn't think of living in a dorm in such a small town as a beneficial experience for me to fully comprehend the American culture. But as ironic as it is, a few weeks after the seminar, I got a phone call from my organization that the Mitchell dorm mom requested my placement in the dorm. Since this was such a huge difference to a normal host family, my organization gave me the choice whether I want to go or not. And even though I wasn't really convinced, I took the challenge and went for it. And I really have to say this is probably one of the best choices I could have made. I learned a lot about the different countries of the other exchange students as well as their American lifestyle. And I also improved my English a lot more than I would have in a regular host family because of the fact that you talk a lot by socializing with the other students every day and night. Even though Mitchell is really small with its 107 people, there are a lot of advantages that it brings with it, such as the small classes in school. I know every single student in my high school, and this makes it a lot easier to learn and fun because you're in a really comfortable atmosphere. Also, the teacher and student relationships are closer than in bigger schools, and because of the teachers knowing every single student, they can provide better personalized support, and this recognition makes you as a student feel important. Another point is that having exchange students in class classes like American Studies, Geography, Current Events, gives American students different views about history, politics, and world events. I also get asked a lot of questions about Germany and how it is to live in a bigger city from other students or members of the community. There are also a lot of benefits of having Americans and exchange students live together in the dorm because we can help each other a lot. For example, our Mexican girl, Paula, helped me a lot improving my Spanish because we live together and she's available to answer any question I have. And another example is our students, Eileen and Ben from South Korea and Taiwan, really helped me and other students with math because of the different way they solve problems. And in conclusion, I can say that having exchange students in the dorm together with American students benefits everybody from the students to the teachers and even the community members. Thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you. Senator Haas and members of the committee. My name is Juris Aitach. I'm from Holland, and I live in the Mitchell dorm. I'm here to testify in favor of allowing foreign exchange students to live in dormitories in Oregon. I think from what I've seen and experienced in Mitchell is that the foreign exchange program is really appreciated by everyone there. I get asked a lot of questions in school and just when I'm walking around town from people who are interested in Holland and its culture. For example, I was in geography class and we were talking about how I had to get used to the dry air in Mitchell because I was having bloody noses all the time. I was still used to the way it is in Holland, and I got followed up by a question, why Holland is called the Netherlands, and after I answered those questions, the class started asking Daniel, our Brazilian student, questions about Brazil and whether or not he had to get used to the dry air, and it turned into an hour-long conversation where everybody was involved in, and then you can really see how people are interested in other cultures. Another example is American Studies. We were talking about World War II, and I could provide a different point of view because Holland was neutral during World War II, and it had a different perspective on the war, and I had a chance to explain, for example, about Dutch underground resistance, the Anne Frank House, where I've been several times. And then we also have German students who can give another perspective on the war from a country that played a really big role in all the world wars. I like the fact that there are other exchange students in the dorm. We really bond as a group, and you can learn a lot about other cultures and countries, and it gives a wide base of knowledge about them. From the habits to the food they eat. And as we, as exchange students, improve American students in some ways, they give us the experience to know their culture, improve our English, and get us involved in the community. My view upon small towns has really changed. I never thought I would like it as much as I do. Living in a small town gives you a lot more opportunities than a big town would do. You can join a sport team without tough tryouts or strict selections. You also make a lot of really good friends, and you know everyone in the school. The experience is way different because I came from a school in Holland that had 2,500 students, where you had a selective group of friends, and especially for exchange students, I can imagine that it's really hard to interact with everybody else in the big school because it's not a really big deal to be an exchange student in a really big school. Compared to what it is when you're a Mitchell, because they're so, a small amount of students that, they're really interested in. They see you every day and they ask you questions, and that is what would not happen that often in a big school. And it made this experience a lot better because I felt really special as an exchange student, and I could share a lot of things about my country and they could share a lot of things about their culture. Thank you for your time to hear my presentation, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Senator Haas and members of the committee, hello, my name is Jenna Perry Zapara. I live in Mitchell Dorm and I am a 10th grader at Mitchell High School. I am here to testify in favor of House Bill 3359. The community of Mitchell, for being such a small school, is made culturally diverse by admitting exchange students to live in the dorm. They have different perspectives on languages, politics, wars, and other world issues, and we can benefit from this exchange of knowledge because, as many will tell you, small towns need interactions with people who have traveled abroad. It's a reciprocal situation because when they come to learn English and immerse themselves in the American culture, they also give us insight as to what happens on their side of the earth. Hearing about their school, their family, their language, even their food is a learning experience for everyone that not many can say they've had. This is also really a chance to make lifelong friends from around the world. I remember one time when some exchange students and I got to talking about World War II, how the different countries were affected, grandparents that fought, and how the exchange students' families were changed. It was the most in-depth conversation we've had at the dorm all year because they were essentially representatives from every European country affected in World War II, like Germany, Japan, Holland, Czech Republic, and the U.S., all except Great Britain and Russia. Let me just say I learned more from World War II from that conversation than I ever did in any history textbook. Going to school with exchange students is really an eye-opening experience, and they have only made my years at Mitchell more enjoyable, yet educational at the same time. Thank you for letting me present my opinion, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Thanks to you three, you're great ambassadors for continuing this program.
Thank you.
We're glad
Thank
to have you here at the Castle. Any questions?
I'm incredibly biased because as soon as we got floor session today, I'm on my way to Spray, and Wheeler County is my favorite place in the entire state. And so I got to tell you, it's a beautiful place, and I'm glad that you guys get to experience there, and I really appreciate you guys coming all the way over here and giving us some update on this, so I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I've been to Mitchell, and if I'm not mistaken, just in Mitchell or outside is a marker that marks the very center of Oregon, the very geographical center.
Oh, wow.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I can ask a question. And do you students know how Mitchell got its name, after whom it was named?
I can't remember. I think somebody told me that once, but...
It was a state senator.
She had to look that up.
I know. Really? Of course
she
I did.
She had to look that up.
Of course I did.
But he wasn't exactly...
John H. Mitchell.
And there's an interesting history lesson on John H. Mitchell. You should read about how he got there and how his career ended.
Interesting character.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just for the committee's sake, I would like to bring up Brian Reeder to talk about the workings of how this foreign exchange process works and what this does, the costs.
Thank you, Chair Hass. Brian Reeder, Department of Education. Under Oregon law currently, we treat students who are here on an exchange pretty much the same way we treat residents of Oregon. For funding purposes, they are counted in the funding formula, and the districts in which they are considered resident receive formula funding for those students. A number of years ago, in response to some perceived abuses of that, the legislature tightened up the definition of resident to prevent districts from bringing in students not as part of exchange programs, but simply recruiting foreign students to come to school in the United States to bolster the funding of the school district, and so tightened up the residency statutes to prevent that sort of thing.
And that was 2008?
I don't remember the year that was done. It was in the last 4 or 5 years, I believe.
Okay, and so for these schools, these qualify for the small school remote funding status?
Chair Hass, yes. The small school, small remote school funding statutes give additional student weights in our formula to school districts that have small schools. The adjustment is based on the number of students in the school. Exchange students would be counted the same way as any other student in that formula.
And Senator Bonamici?
I was going to ask, these students are very proficient in English, but are they considered English language learners since English is not their native language?
Chair Hass, Senator Bonamici, they would be considered English language learners for the formula only if they're enrolled in an English as a second language program. I believe most foreign exchange students are not enrolled in those programs, so they wouldn't receive the extra half weight for ESL.
Okay.
And if you could give us the policy reason, to the extent that you know it, why this is not allowed under the law, why those changes were made.
Well, I think it's Senator Haas, it's what I think the perceived problem was, that districts who, and particularly small districts who are losing enrollment, which was putting great pressure on their budgets, saw an opportunity to bring in foreign students independent of exchange programs, but simply to recruit students from other countries to come to Oregon, go to school, and be included in that district's ADM counts, and therefore generate additional funding for the districts without generating the benefits of a true exchange program. They were simply in Oregon for the purpose of going to school, not for the purpose of cultural exchange. That was the perceived problem.
And under that designation of remote schools, they can, a student from this information from the department gains an additional 0.66 weight at a certain level, which equates to $3,800 additional per student.
Chair Haas, the weighting under the small school correction varies depending on the size of the school, so that may be an average, but as the school, larger schools that get close to the threshold would get less additional weighting, very small schools get more additional weighting.
Okay. Questions? It's a little bit of a tricky program here. Senator Morris?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative, did you have any closing?
Senator Haas, Committee, John Huffman.
And we have Lori.
Lori.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I was going to ask. I was hoping she was on the list.
Okay,
Lori
sorry.
From Burnt River.
Thank you. Chairman Haas, committee members. For the record, my name is Lori Andrews. I am from Burnt River School, which is in Unity, Oregon. I did graduate from Mitchell High School, so I am a Wheeler County girl. I appreciate the opportunity for this hearing, and I am here to testify in favor of House Bill 3359. Burnt River is a rural school located in eastern Oregon. We have 35 students in grades K through 12, and all of the five schools in this bill are very similar in size and rural location. Burnt River has 7 foreign exchange students living as an international foreign family. I think that sometimes we use the term dorm when really they do live as a family. Our students have, it's a married couple that have a baby right now. They just had a baby. So this young one has 7 siblings, and they operate and function very much like a family of 7 kids. They go hiking, camping, fishing. They participate in ranch activities and all the activities at school. And listening to these students, I know that our students have had very similar experiences in the classroom. I also teach 3 classes at Burnt River, so I'm very involved with the students. And we have a lot of conversations about their experiences. This small number of exchange students has allowed us to educate our local students and provide them with a cultural experience that will serve them well as citizens of not just Oregon, but our world. I just want to say that it's a tremendous program, and it has been great for Burnt River, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. You're a superintendent, teacher, principal?
Yes.
Bottle washer.
I cooked lunch.
Yes. Can you speak to the finances of your school, your district, with and without this program?
Chairman Haas, the funding is definitely, it's a complicated issue. The formula is a complicated formula. But yes, these students are treated as any other student that is in our school. We do receive small school correction. it's very important for us to have this program because it allows us to have more students in the classroom. Of course, they participate in all the activities. Some play sports, some choose not to, but even if they are not on the team, they're part of the, you know, the whole experience. So it is critical to have more students in our classrooms. It allows for discussions, just as those students pointed out. You know, we need to have that experience for our own students.
Where would you be without this program if this bill doesn't pass?
I think that we would be looking at a school that would be very much different from what we have now as far as a traditional school, most likely more distance learning. I think it would affect the number of staff that we have, and we have a small staff now, but as numbers go down, you have to look at that. And I would like to keep the experience as close to a, you know, normal high school experience as possible.
Questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you for making the trip.
Thank you, Senator. Committee members.
Senator Haas, committee. Just in closing, I had an amazing experience Saturday. I don't know how many of you have spoken at high school graduations so far, or will over the next week or so, but I, from the Dalles, drove 180 miles east Saturday morning to be out to Long Creek to speak at the graduation for graduating seniors in the class. A phenomenal experience. There were probably 120 folks in the gymnasium to show the kind of community front porch support that these little schools have. So, anyway, happy to answer any questions.
You've seen the -3 amendments.
Yes.
And you support those.
I do.
And in terms of this report, I guess we would like to make sure that you're a part and parcel of that effort.
Chair Haas would be happy to participate in that and also the work group to try to come up with a permanent solution. You know, the chances are very good. Senator Bonamici can speak to this probably even better than I can right now, but maybe not. Through the redistricting, I will probably end up with none of these schools, but I am still passionate about the very remote rural Eastern Oregon schools. Whether I have any or not, I think it's something that needs our attention to the funding formula, and so I'll definitely be glad to work on any solution we can come up with.
Well, I, for one, appreciate your advocacy for these little school districts, and they should be proud of you for doing it.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your support and willingness for the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, Senator Morris.
Well, I'm just going to comment, Mr. Chair. A good part of my junior year in high school, I spent in a very small school of about, as I recall, 45 to 50 students. And when I transferred, I had three AP classes from the school in Lebanon of about 1,200 students. And they were not offered at all. So I spent at least two-thirds of my day with the principal, and he was my instructor. But he didn't know much about the AP subjects. So I can appreciate the difficulty of with small schools and depth and breadth of curriculum and trying to hold them together. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything, however. But small schools have their challenges.
Yes.
I kind of want to relate an interesting experience to Senator Morris. When I was a kid in California, I went to a small school called Cantua Creek, which is halfway between Three Rocks and Five Points. Those are the cities that were nearby in California. And my school was 90% Hispanic and 5% Indian Hindu. And the rest of us were mixed. The rest of the 5% of us were mixed. And so moving to Oregon was a huge culture shock for me. but it really is an experience that you get by going to a small school that is so incredibly unique. And when you talk about these communities that are very, very remote, the school is the community. The school sports are the community. Everything is centered around those schools. And and Wheeler County happens to be one of the greatest counties in the entire state of Oregon. So, but the idea is that I really think that these are unique parts of the community that are even more part of the community than, say, your school is in your own over here. This is where the community meets and interacts on so many different levels. So I appreciate the fact we're going to move a bill to support these small schools.
Sir, thank you, Mr. Chair. In my districts, it's kind of the opposite challenge. You know, we've got very large school districts, very large high schools that have its own funding challenges. But despite the fact that, unfortunately, the reality of a budget is that it's a fixed pie, that, you know, despite that this complicates the distribution of funds throughout the state, I'm very pleased to be able to support this regardless, because I do believe at the end of the day we're all in this together, and whether or not somebody is, whether or not a school is robust in Wheeler County is just as important to me as an Oregonian as whether or not the schools in my own little province are excelling. So I'm happy to support this.
Thank you, and I think those are good notes. That I think Senator Bonamici and I in our two Senate districts have five of the largest high schools in Oregon with over 2,000 students, and two of those weren't even there 10 years ago. And
they also had four people that graduated.
Sorry.
My elbow.
There goes the shield, Bill. But, you know, there are problems in education because of budgetary reasons all over. In North Portland, Beaverton, Mitchell, never end. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3359. Let's open up a work session on House Bill 3359. For purposes of adopting the dash threes, we cannot move the bill out because we don't have the proper paperwork, but we will on Tuesday. So, Senator Morris, if you want to make that motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 3359, dated May 23, 2011.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the dash threes to Senate House Bill 3359. Discussion?
Just, Mr. Chair, just to, I guess, repeating some of the comments that have already been made, I'm happy to support this, even though I do have serious concerns about the level at which we're funding all of our schools. And I understand that there are benefits to having the students there, and that's why I'm supporting the bill. I'm not supporting it to save the small school districts. That is an ancillary impact, I think, of what we're doing. But we in the long run, need to take a really hard look at how we fund education in this state and make it better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the dash threes are adopted, and we will roll this over until Tuesday to pass it out. Close the work session on House Bill 3359 and open up a work session on House Bill 2299.
Okay.
We've taken this up before.
Yes. As Cindy and Morgan Allen come up, I'll read a quick summary. 2299 requires the school district in which a public charter school is located to be responsible for identifying, locating, and evaluating students to determine which students may be in need of special education and related services, provides distribution of funding to the school district for those services, and requires notice to the parents related to special education and related services, declares an emergency effective July 1st. There is a dash 7 amendment to this, and I will refer to you to brief us on that new amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. We're pleased to be here with the Dash 7 amendment. I believe you're here about a week and a half or so ago. The Dash 7 represents a consensus, and I just want to thank Superintendent Temple from SIO, Karen Hikes, the department, Cindy Hunt, and Representative Gelser. what we're doing with this bill, if you remember, this is a quirk of the charter law, if you will, is that if a student has special education needs and they attend a charter school outside of the school district that they live in, they remain a resident and the responsibility of the school district they live in, even though they're being educated in a charter school in another district. And this bill would just say we're treating all those kids the same as any other student that attends a charter school. You become a resident of the district that sponsors the charter school. And the Dash 7 Amendment, if you remember, the concern was, I think the original bill was drafted a little too broad. It applied to all students, and we really meant it to apply only to those out-of-district students. So the amendment really does a couple things. The first is it sort of reduces some redundancies in records requests and narrows it down to those non-resident students. There's language in there that makes the state school fund payments, once these students become residents of those charter schools, it expedites it and makes it consistent with the rest of the state school fund payment deadlines in statute. And I think the most important thing that this does is it clarifies to those parents or guardians or the person who's in a parental relationship with that student that may be attending a charter school in another district, it clarifies and makes sure those parents understand that the district that sponsors that charter school is responsible for their student and their special education needs. I think that was the one thing that was really important, especially to Representative Gelser. So we've made sure that that's very clear, that when those students go to that school, that IEP is in place, that those parents get notified that, yes, you know, your student is now our responsibility, and if you have questions about special education, you can contact our district. So those are the elements of the bill. Very happy to say that, again, all the folks I mentioned earlier and that you heard testify before are supportive of this, and we would appreciate the adoption of the Dash 7 Amendment.
Thank you.
Cindy Hunt, Oregon Department of Education. I don't think I have anything to add to what Morgan just testified to, unless you have any questions for me.
Questions, Senator Morse?
Just a matter of clarification. You said that you had participation from Gary, from Siles. The other charter schools, were they engaged in the discussion?
Chair Hassan, Senator Morse, Karen Ikus, who represents the Northwest Center for Educational Options, which I believe represents the vast majority of charter schools, mm-hmm. Helped work through this amendment with us, and it has her support, and I believe she's here today in support of the amendment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Record will show there are head nods. Okay, other questions? Thank you. Let's close the public hearing on House Bill 2299 and open up a work session on House Bill 2299 for purposes of adopting the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2299 dated 5-26-11.
Senator Morse moves the Dash 7 11s to House Bill 2259. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Dash 7 amendments are adopted. We don't have the paperwork yet. We will have to carry this over until Tuesday, and we'll pass it then. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2299 and put on our chef's hats for the next two bills. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2750.
Okay. House Bill 2750 allows district school boards to adopt policy for use of alcoholic beverages in culinary arts classes taught at schools of the school district. It establishes certain requirements of the policy, declares an emergency. We have in your packets an amendment, A4, and this amendment clarifies that the schools are secondary schools, and it specifies only using alcohol as an ingredient in a culinary arts class or in preparation for a culinary competition or demonstration, permits policies adopted for the use of alcohol at specified culinary competitions or demonstrations or culinary arts classes with required school board approval and limited use.
Well, thank you. Just in the nick of time, we have Representative Klein. Why don't you all come up, Brad Swank and Chef Wewick.
Todd, man. Got hung up on the cupcakes out there for the party. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21 here in Salem, includes South Salem High School, which is sort of the impetus for this bill. First and foremost, you got to get past the relating clause, which is relating to the use of alcoholic beverages in schools. So if we just get past that, move into the guts of the bill, I think that you will find a carefully crafted set of sideboards to allow school districts to adopt a policy that would allow supervised use of alcoholic beverages in cooking with the consent of the parent, and I'll let these folks talk about the importance of this. South has a nationally known and renowned culinary arts program, and we found ourselves at a disadvantage in some of the competitions and ability to host events due to Oregon's prohibition on utilizing alcohol in recipes at the high school level, that other states don't have that disadvantage in terms of the use of that material. So these two are the experts. But we have to, as in the House, similar deal, had to get people over the relating clause, listen to, you know, OLCC's amendments, and eventually we're able to get passage. But it does sound a little alarming right off the bat, I will acknowledge. And that's all I have for you. And I think these two can explain, you know, the merits of and how it works in the real world of culinary arts competitions, et cetera.
Okay. Just Swank here to explain amaretto cheesecake.
Actually, for the Chair Haas and members of the committee, my name is Brad Swank. I'm here this afternoon as a volunteer. I don't get paid for this. I'm not representing anybody but my own interest in seeing something positive happen to Chef Wywick's program. We would like to, if we may, start off with a visual so you'll understand what we're talking about and understand more clearly how I got, other than the fact that I'm something of a foodie, how I got involved in the enthusiasm of these kids and what they're doing, because it's not regular home ec, if that's all right with you.
Samples would have been better.
This, we thought about that. Tiffany, do I just touch it like a regular?
I'm just so excited to get in there.
We came here to compete against the best, and we're here to win against the best.
This is where it's all going down. You can do in the kitchen.
It's going to be difficult, but it'll be fun.
Come on, come on. These students are here for one reason, and one reason only.
Go, let's go, let's go.
To win the National Pro Start Invitational.
Ready.
At stake, nearly $1.1 million in scholarships and a chance to go to the nation's top culinary school.
This can change all of our lives.
So this is where it all happens, the competition floor. You've got 39 teams from across the country to do three menu items in 1 hour. It's go big or go home. They're preparing an entree, appetizer, and dessert. But that's not all the judges will be scoring. There are also points for things like organization, knife skills,
fingers up,
sanitation, communication.
This is going to go into an Italian meringue.
Presentation and execution. Sorry.
4,000 students have competed in order to get here to the national championship.
4,000 students to come down to the 39 teams,
about 300 competitors.
The National Restaurant Association runs the ProStart program. They've developed a curriculum that goes straight into the classroom.
It's one team, one dream.
High school students spend hundreds of hours studying that curriculum.
You can just tell that a lot of practice went into this.
And in the process, get a jump start on a culinary career.
We're good.
ProStart was really developed to serve youth and give them a viable career option in the restaurant industry. Now it's going global. We have a team here from Puerto Rico. We have a team here from Guam.
In fact, Guam's been to the competition 5 times, including 1 time when their entree, as a former ProStar judge myself, I know what these kids are up against. And the judging starts before they even fire up their burners.
Good morning, Chef.
Good morning. We are going to take your items out of your boxes, and then we're going to weed you through those, okay?
Any mistakes in the way they've packed up their ingredients will cost them points.
And let's just take a peek.
And at this level of competition, that can make or break a team.
I'm nervous, but I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I think we're going to do great.
1, 2, 3.
Team Arkansas! Once all the teams are checked in, then it's time to start the clock.
All right, you may begin.
Now, these aren't your simple little minor dishes like wieners and beans. Check this out. Team Oregon, field and sea soup, forage sea beans, ramps, fiddlehead ferns, morels, and a spicy rockfish sausage, Oregon vermilion rockfish, herb gnocchi, spring asparagus, red pepper cream with a lemon caper relish. Something you hear every day at high-end restaurants. But let's not forget, folks, these students are anywhere from 16 to 18 years old competing in a national competition with a huge audience of people. This right here is out of bounds.
We're good. We have 20 minutes left.
Joe Strapoli,
yes, sir.
Team captain. What's on the menu today?
We got beef strip loins, prime, red wine reduction. The appetizer, we're doing like a deconstructed cod salad.
We've got all the recipes laid out, pictures of what you're looking for.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's clean, it's organized, it's dialed, and that's important. Because big points can be lost early if teams aren't talking.
Come on!
Chef, what are you judging today?
I'm on team communication, team organization. They only have an hour to produce this meal between four people, so the communication has to be succinct.
And that's Chair Haas and members of the committee. Again, my name is Brad Swank. I'm mostly retired, and I live in Salem at 1045 Cross Street Southeast, which is not too awfully far from here. My son went to South Salem High School, where the culinary arts team, Todd Wywick's team, is on. He wasn't on the team. He was doing something else. But I was on the board of a parent nonprofit that raised money for academics, for classroom needs at South. I'm not on that board anymore because my son's not in high school anymore, but there was unfinished business, I felt, from this team that I'd become so enthused at. When I was on that board, we gave them money to help them get to nationals. They raised that money themselves. If you ever watched, they were the most professional. Their food was so good. I was so impressed. And I heard when they got back, and Jeff Wywick has had his team to nationals twice while I was on that board. Once they were ninth, once they were sixth in the nation. There's over $1 million in scholarships that are awarded. In 2010, it was $1.4 million of scholarships that are awarded, but they start with the top five teams. And each time he was told by judges at the competition that had they been using alcohol as a volatile in their sauces or soups, probably their team would be up on the rostrum and they would be making, they'd be getting scholarships. And so I felt that other teams, if you look at my testimony, don't be intimidated, it's three pages. First page is my testimony. The second and third pages are facts. On the back of the third page, you'll find, under facts, a list of examples of teams from the 2010 competition and what they used alcohol for. A creme caramel dessert, a Caribbean pork entree, and all those instances. So I felt that our students from Oregon should be on a level playing field, should have the same tools to compete for these scholarships as everybody else. But it's not just about the competitions. In Chef Wywick's class, those kids are learning about small businesses, they're learning about professionalism, they're learning how to work with others, communications. A number of the students in their schools who will enter are students who will enter their professions by other than the traditional means of going through college, and this may well be a gateway for them. I was incredibly impressed, and so I'm here spending my time to volunteer to convince people that they should do this. There are amendments. They're the -4 amendments. Your administrator has explained them. They're simple. We worked them out with the OLCC. They asked after the bill left the House if we'd sit down with them and make some things more specific and clearer. I worked on those with them. And we're happy with them. We do think they make things clear. They address the OLCC's concerns. They give more power to the school boards to make it clear that they can have control over whether this happens, how it happens, whether it happens in a single classroom for a single team. If they're big schools, maybe one high school has a team and another doesn't that's ready to do it. They can make those decisions. We're supportive of the amendments. We appreciate Representative Klim's work entirely, but I'm really not the main attraction here. Chef Wywick is much cuter and has a lot more experience than I do, and it's his team that motivated me, and I think Representative Klim, who's helped them before. So I introduce Chef Wywick.
Chair Haas. Members of the committee, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to have help.
Why don't you start off with your name?
Yes, Todd Wywick. I'm a teacher currently at South Salem High School, It's the end of my third year there. I really, really value having some help. This is not my area of expertise, so it's nice having somebody to help me navigate through trying to get this addressed. I went to culinary school in 1993. When I got out of culinary school, I went to the Phoenician Hotel and worked in their pastry department for 2.5 years. Moved to the Northwest because we needed to go somewhere that was green. Tired of the dry desert, and I love it up here. My family and I are here in Salem for the long run, I think. I worked in some hotels and restaurants in Washington, and I got to know Jeff James. Some of you might know Jeff James and J. James Restaurant in Washington. We came to town to open a restaurant. When I got here to open the restaurant at J. James, one of the first things that happened was that the teacher from South Salem High School called and asked for a mentor. And I didn't want to do it. They dragged me kicking and screaming in there. I thought that would be just not a good thing for me to be doing. But it became very apparent very quickly to me how talented high school kids can be. I had no idea at that point. They impressed me to a level that, changed my life, because I'm now out of the business and teaching it instead. I never thought that would happen. But these students are tremendously talented. A lot of them, like has just been mentioned, are not going to be going to college. They don't have that kind of money. But a lot of them do have amazing talent and skills, and it could be refined into something special. So I have taken the helm there at South Salem High School. I've been mentoring their team for the whole time that we've done this competition that was mentioned. The competition is one part of a big package. Competition is very important to me, and I do it every year based solely pretty much on the fact that we can win scholarship money. Our team, as far as the state record goes, has never placed less than 10th. We placed 9th and 10th once each, and then first 4 times, and second twice, and third twice. So our students have got a pretty decent record on the local stage of being able to win scholarship money. But the nationals, we've been there twice. And both times the judges told us, well, why didn't you put, if you'd have finished this sauce with some wine, or if you'd have had some wine in this chowder, it would have been a lot better. And they didn't seem aware of the rules problem that we have, that some schools can use it and some can't. That was very frustrating, especially the second time when we were sixth place. The difference between sixth place and second place was only 4 points. So I don't know how far we were away. If we'd had been able to put some white wine in our chowder that year, we might well have been able to take fourth place or fifth. And that money would have been really nice for the kids. We work really, really hard to get to these competitions, and it takes many, many hours and a lot of practice to do it. But another thing that I'm really passionate about is just being able to teach them how and why we use alcohol in the first place. If you look at my testimony, there's a little part in there about the volatile molecules, this chemistry stuff, but most of what we taste happens in our nose, and there's a huge amount of volatile flavors that come to the party when we can use wine and alcohol in our cooking. It's not there without it. You can't replace it. And, these students, they deserve every chance that we can give them to have as much education as possible that's free. This is something I've just come to realize not very, very long ago. I have the ability in my classroom to give these kids a very large chunk of culinary education free. And if I have them 4 years, I can do amazing things with them. I welcome any of you to come see what they do. It's pretty shocking what they can produce. The things that you see in that video there, those platings and the quality of food, high school kids can do that. I just went to Vegas this year, and I was in Chicago last year, and the food that I had there, I looked at it, and I thought in my heart, totally convinced that my students could make anything that we had there. And I think that's really neat. And the possibilities for these young people are endless. We just need the tools to help them get there. So, again, Chair Haas, committee members, I really appreciate your time and letting us bring this forward to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, we thank you. Thank all three of you, and Chef, for your passion towards this and your newfound passion of teaching. Questions?
I have a question. I just have a comment. We earlier in this committee today, we heard from some foreign exchange students, from one from Holland and one from Germany, and they would probably find this almost comical that we had to do this by legislation. So I think it's a great program that you're running, and I support the bill. So thanks for bringing it to our attention.
The year that the video was taken, we had a Japanese foreign exchange student on the team. So she got to be part of a state championship culinary team and a sixth place finish in nationals. It was pretty tough.
And also, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment because I was looking through the materials and apparently there was some concern, and even Representative Clem mentioned, you know, get past that relating to clause about, you know, I don't think that anyone who is supported or will support this bill condones inappropriate underage drinking. However, sometimes we make it so strict that it's almost more enticing to kids if they, you know, it's the forbidden fruit, and when they finally get free from home and go to college, they tend to binge drink. And I think if they're more exposed to responsible use of alcohol when they're younger, you avoid those sorts of problems. So seeing a responsible use of alcohol in cooking, I think, might sort of start to address some of those issues, and perhaps could be a positive message.
I have lockable storage. But basically what will happen is I take my pitcher, three cups, I give kitchen number one half a cup, and I give kitchen number two half a cup, and I give kitchen number three, and they'll never touch it. It'll be me. So it'll go directly into their pot. So any of you have ever had Coke out of a van, you can imagine having the Coke without the van. It doesn't work. So, and a lot of finishing of sauces and so forth, that's impossible. Mother sauces, you know, many of the French mother sauces, they have alcohol in them, and they're just not right without it. It's a totally different thing. So it's kind of like a car with three wheels. So it would round out the education a lot.
Well, I know I always cook with wine, and sometimes I add it to the food.
On the record.
Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2750 and open up a work session on House Bill 2750. So we have dash fours, Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to House Bill 2750, dated 5/9/11.
Senator Morse moves the dash fours to House Bill 2750. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Are we good to go, or are we waiting?
We're good to go.
We're good to go.
We're good to go. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2750 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves House Bill 2750A as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor of the Senate. Any discussion?
Well, just Mr. Chair, I hope they come back and after this bill is implemented, I hope they come back and let us know how it's going, and hope we see them at the top. Thanks.
Good to that. Further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2750 passes and goes to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. I think we're down to back to Senator Von Amici.
I'll be happy to carry it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Close the work session on House Bill 27A and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3042. You could read us a summary, Linda.
Of course. House Bill 3042 provides that charging or payment of tuition or fee for food and beverage career program class, workshop, or seminar concerning food or beverage industry training that is offered by education provider and includes consumption of alcoholic beverages is not the sale or purchase of alcoholic beverages. It allows serving of alcoholic beverages for educational purposes to persons 18 to 20 years of age enrolled in the food or beverage career program if part of the class in if it's part of the class and supervised, allows possession and consumption of alcoholic beverages for educational purposes if service is part of the program class, provides that property owner may allow a person 18 to 20 who possesses and consumes alcoholic beverages for educational purposes as part of a class to remain on the property.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Andy Olson, and I am a state representative out of the Albany area. Thanks for having the opportunity to present this bill to you. I'll just kind of give you a nutshell version here. Early last year, over a year ago now, I was contacted by Scott Anselm, the program director and retired instructor Gary Snyder of the culinary program at Lynn Benton Community College regarding this their program. They shared about a dilemma that they were experiencing in the program as it tied directly to education and the business community. This is how simple the dilemma or the problem was. Students enrolled in the culinary program could not fully benefit and learn in order to move forward in their chosen profession. Those students enrolled in the program under the age of 21 were prohibited from handling and tasting alcohol. You see, learning the different tastes and odors become extremely important to master the culinary program, and to be effective in the world business, you have to be able to know those things. As a result, I began to meet on several occasions with the program directors from LBCC, Oregon State University, Chemeketa Community College, and some other culinary institutes. Included in our meetings involved students, a representative from OLCC, Linda Ignoski, and a member from the Linn County Sheriff's Office to assist in crafting House Bill 3042. Excuse me. This legislation will allow students who are 18 to 20 years of age who are enrolled in the designated college program, other accredited approved training facility, workshop or seminar pertaining to their food or beverage careers to handle and consume alcohol for educational purposes under the direction and supervision of the instructor for that course. In the interim work group that we worked on, there was a discussion among the representatives of Oregon's colleges as to the amount of alcohol used in each class per student for cooking and or tasting. That's actually captured and controlled in the policies that each college has right now, which I didn't realize that they're very defined even above the age 21 limit. House Bill 3042 has been created with sideboards, ensuring that the current laws governing minors and alcohol are maintained, and identifies that each program has in place policies that chart the course between instructors and students that would not violate any OLCC laws. And then consider this as I close. Oregon has a wine industry that has grown from 70 wineries in 1990 to over 300 wineries in 2010. Both Oregon's wine industry and microbrew industry are growing fast and are becoming well-respected outside our state's borders. Many students entering college are interested in careers in these industries but are prevented from enrolling in their desired course of study due to their age. And unfortunately, many have to wait 3 years before entering the program due to the age issue. I am here for any questions.
Thanks, Rep. Olson. It's very interesting. The bill before this had a relating clause of the use of alcoholic beverages in schools. This one is use of alcoholic beverages for educational purposes. So, again, we have to get past the relating clause. Questions? Senator Bonamici?
I don't have any. Thank you.
Yeah, I think of forgotten stuff possibilities.
I think alcohol has been used for educational purposes in different contexts.
Wasn't there a movie about that in the 70s?
Can I call questions?
Just remember?
Yeah. We have a list of people that had signed up to be here before today, but this you're kind of representing the team today.
Okay. Well, thank you very kindly.
Other questions? Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Close public hearing on House Bill 3042 and open up a work session on House Bill 3042. Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3042 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves House Bill 3042 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions? Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 3042 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator George, you're up.
Sure.
Okay. Committee, if you're not too tipsy for these two bills. Our last day of taking action on any bills is Tuesday. I need your promptness and attendance.
The two carryovers.
And let me make sure I announce that we are carrying over House Bill 2259 and House Bill 3359 to add to Tuesday's agenda. There's no further business before us. We are adjourned.